is the best show here.
Head show! Head show! Head show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
And that's no lie either, because Link is here tonight.
Woohoo!
Ooh.
He has the internet is up at this point.
Our special guest star, Link, tonight.
Ooh, got a visit from Al Gore, and the internets are here.
Woo-hoo.
After all the fun.
Another
last
exciting
week
episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. What are we up to? Episode what? 193?
One hell of a lot of shows.
Sounds close to it.
I think this is
193. Yes, 193. This is 193. 193.
200? Not far at all.
193. Seven away from 200.
Yeah, in the near future, a couple months, man, we'll be at 200.
And that's a whole lot of us jabbering back and forth, you know, 193 shows a couple hours a clip, so.
Are we good tonight?
I am.
We're good. We're good here. How about you guys over there?
I'm good.
The wonderful
Dan
world of office. Easton.
Have to go, how's the weather over there, Link?
About the same as it is over there, I would think. I'm in Downingtown right now, which is like 2 hours from Easton, and it's about an hour and 20 minutes from Philly by train.
So you're near where, Lancaster?
By train.
You're near Lancaster?
Getting pretty close. I'm right outside of Exton, if you know where Exton is.
Down the road from Intercourse.
Yep, down in there, pretty close. Intercourse and Virginville and all of those nice places, right? Aren't Intercourse
those,
and Virginville right next to each other?
I think so. They're like right down the road from each other.
I thought that was kind of funny.
That's all the Amish community in Lancaster County, PA.
They did some kind of segregation there or something, you know? If you do it, you live here. If you're not, you know, you live in the other place. I don't know.
Cool. Well,
but anyway, yeah, it's nice down here. Yeah.
We got Sean Riley, who's the developer of Money Dance. Sean, welcome to the show.
Ah, thank you. Very nice to be here.
Sean, where are you located now?
Right now I'm in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Nice town, Edinburgh.
Yeah. Yep. I've been living here for about a year. I used to live in Virginia, in the United States.
Oh, Dan's down in Virginia, actually.
Yeah, where in Virginia do you live?
Richmond.
Okay. I'm in Yorktown.
Ah, okay.
Richmond.
Hey, Yorktown's a nice place.
Yeah, it's an hour, about an hour away from Richmond. Nice area.
Yeah, it's a night and day difference with Scotland. So that's great over here. I definitely recommend it for anybody willing to move overseas.
Now, what prompted you to move over to Scotland?
Just wanted a little more adventure in our lives. I mean, a lot of people don't believe it, so we just kind of picked up and moved just because we felt like it. But
you just threw a dart at a world map there, then?
Almost. My wife and I, stopped by Edinburgh on our honeymoon, and it was so nice. We figured just had to kind of move over here for a while, and we're glad we did.
Yeah. Edinburgh's a nice town. I was there about 10 years ago, and I had a blast there.
Yeah. Yeah. Great place.
Well, yep. You got Money Dance.
Yep.
You want to give them the brief description of what exactly Money Dance is?
Sure. Money Dance is a personal finance application. It's a GUI-oriented application, and It's used for tracking your finances, your checkbooks, your savings accounts, your investments, credit cards, things like that. And it's a definitely end user software, and it was kind of just intended to be as easy to use as possible and to have as many of the features as Quicken or Microsoft Money as possible. And I think it did a pretty good job of that. It is written in Java. Some people might call that a curse. Other people really appreciate it. It does mean it runs cross-platform. So it runs on the Mac, it runs on Linux, it runs on Windows, FreeBSD, just about anything that runs Java. It's basically a free trial download. If you go to moneydance.com, you can download a version and use it. I think the only limitation, it is a, for pay, commercial software program. The limitation on the trial version is that you can manually import, or you can manually enter 100 transactions before it requires you to, purchase a license and enter your license key. Downloads and imported transactions are basically unlimited. So if you download and import all of your transactions, you never need to purchase a license. We try and make it easy to use software and just kind of point and click install as well as just using it. Yeah, you can download transactions from your bank. You can pay bills online using your bank's OFX service, and a ton of other little features, which we can probably talk about in detail if you like. Yep.
Sure. I guess the big mm-hmm. big question I have is how hard it is to get cooperation from the banks to be able to import your data from them.
There's kind of two aspects to that. The first aspect is just importing data. A lot of banks will provide your transaction information in downloadable files of one of usually two different formats. The first is QIF, which is the oldest format. It's been around forever. QIF is a very simple text-based format, and anybody can download and import their transactions into it. However, Intuit has been phasing out QIF import, at least for downloaded transactions, in Quicken. So in an effort, what I believe is in an effort to phase out just the QIF format altogether. Now, the second format is OFX, and there's different names for it. It's sometimes called QFX or Web Connect. OFX is basically a standard that is defined at www.ofx.net. It's an HTML, and more recent versions are XML format. It basically is it's a much nicer format than QIF. It has just better structure to it. It's both a format and a protocol, really. And OFX format data is easier to import, easier to match up downloaded transactions with, say, transactions that you've already entered into your personal finance software. One issue is that OFX is generally supported by most banks now. Basically all the banks that work with Quicken or Microsoft Money. And so MoneyDance can just import that standard format. It's not like we have to actually get cooperation and talk to the banks. When it comes to the protocol version, the OFX protocol is also relatively open. So all we need to do is connect to the bank's OFX servers, and as long as MoneyDance speaks the OFX protocol, it can download transactions, pay bills, do basically all the things that Quicken or Microsoft Money can do.
So these standards are third party developed and regulated. It's not driven by anybody in particular, or?
It's actually when I say it's open, it's relatively open. It was developed in the 90s, in the late 90s, by a consortium of including Intuit, CheckFree, and Microsoft, and there might have been other developers in there somewhere, but it's basically you know, the big two or the big three really got together and developed this together. I think it might have been based on something called OFC, Open Finance Connectivity. I might have that name wrong, but I believe that was done by Microsoft, and OFX is kind of similar to that. You know, just kind of more developed and a little more thought and effort put into it. But it is kind of a shared standard, and in this business, I mean, if Intuit and Microsoft do it, then it's basically a standard.
Now, how long have you been developing MoneyDance? How many years since the first release?
I think we're actually coming up on the 10-year anniversary. I originally started it in the summer of 1997. I was living in Virginia, and my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, she came to London for about 3 months to study theater, and so that gave me quite a lot of free time in the evenings and weekends. And so I basically wrote the first version of MoneyDance, while she was gone, and released it online using the artistic license. I think it was the same license they used for Pearl, and so it picked up a few users, and some people started using it, and I've really been the only developer on it for most of the time, and when it was. Even when it was open source, there wasn't really anybody else contributing. So, a few versions into it, maybe like a year or two into it, I had users telling me, you really should be charging for this, and this is great software and all that. So I figured, oh, okay. So I took it closed source, and it just became a commercial program. And I think that was in '99. It became commercial. And it's been kind of just slowly growing in popularity ever since.
So why did you do the program? Was it because there's a void in the money management software area?
Yeah. I was a big Linux user at the time, and I really just never touched Windows, and the one thing I really missed from the first computer that I personally owned was Quicken. I mean, it was a pretty slick piece of software, and the biggest feature I used was the autocomplete of pay names and transactions, and so I wasn't like a real power user, but I just really wanted something to just keep track of my limited checkbook at that time, and there really wasn't anything usable on Linux at the time, and so I figured I'd just write it and just for my own use, and if other people wanted to use it, that'd be great too.
How difficult was it porting it over to other operating systems?
A lot of people would complain about Java, being write once, debug everywhere. It wasn't at first, maybe like the first year or so, it might have been a little bit difficult, working out the display bugs, because we used the Java 1.0 at first, and the AWT was the platform agnostic toolkit, but it did seem to work slightly differently on different platforms, so that was a little bit tricky. But after the first year, it was pretty easy, and now with like GUI toolkits like Swing, it's almost like you don't even have to test on multiple platforms. You can almost be sure that it will, just work. I mean, we do test it, on the main platforms, Linux, Windows, and Mac. For the most part, it's a piece of cake to run it on one and just know that it'll run on all other, supported platforms. It's really made me a supporter of Java, and especially the Swing toolkit.
Java's gotten a lot better. Like, I started coding with Java back in, like, 99 or so, and back then it was painfully slow. I mean, the last release of Java, the application seemed to run a lot quicker.
Yeah.
That's just my impression.
Yeah, and it's, and computers have gotten to the point where you're less kind of bound by memory constraints. you know, to be honest, and that's always been something I've been concerned about. You know, when running Money Dance, yeah, I always, you know, make sure that I, I usually develop on a computer that is not state of the art in terms of how much RAM it has and processor speed. You know, because I want to try and run. I figure if I'm developing the software with a computer that's not as powerful as the average user, then you know, then it'll run pretty snappily. You know, for most users. So I've always tried to keep it lean as far as possible, not, you know, throw too much bloat into the software, and just, you know, keep it as small and fast as possible with Java. And nowadays, now the computers have so much RAM in them and you know, so much virtual memory, it's you know, it's almost not even a concern. You know, some people can't even tell the difference between Java and you know, native software.
Well, let me ask you, when you package your software, what do you rely on? Do you look for static libraries? Do you think, what's the core requirements for Money Dance to run on the system? Just a Java virtual machine?
Yeah, the Java virtual machine. Every other package that we use is basically cross-platform Java. And we actually didn't use any external libraries until Money Dance 2007, this last version, which was released like in very early January. And the package that we're using now is JFreeChart, which is a LGPL graphing library. You know, before that we used their own internal graphing stuff, and you know, JFreeChart is just, you know, so much nicer. And so our system is pretty, all we need is Java. And, you know, you can load the software just with a couple of JAR files, you know, the Java archive files. And it's, you know, it's pretty easy to get going on any system. So if you go to our website, you can download an installer or just a static package, a bundle that you can just download and install on just about any operating system. We have installers for Windows. You know, the install moneydance.exe file, and just double click it and installs it. On the Mac, they have a pretty slick application, packaging where you don't have to install anything. You just download it and that's the application. Double click on it and run it. And on Linux, we have a couple different things. You know, we have the generic install, which is if you have Java, you can just expand this tar file, and it will be, you know, a fully functioning version of Money Dance. Just double click or, you know, run this the Money Dance script from the command line, and it'll find Java and start up. And we also have a point and click installer that you know, works most of the time. You know, it's you got a little, you know, a few tricks in there for, you know, people who are using, who have like maybe non-conformant versions of Java on their system or something like that.
Well, Java gotten a lot easier since, you know, they released it under the GPL. So now that it's all in the main Linux distribution repositories, you know, I code in Java too somewhat, and I use Eclipse, and just going in and using the Sun Java packages installed on my system. A lot of times with Eclipse, I would have to put a dynamic link in there so that so it knew where Java was, you know.
Right,
and
right.
You don't have to do that anymore. It's all, once you do, you know, I run Ubuntu and I do, you know, apt-get install, you know, whatever, JVM, whatever. Everything's installed and you don't have to fiddle with everything. There's no point or anything. It's a lot easier now.
Yeah, and that's really just a factor of the license. I mean, there were no technical constraints keeping Linux distributions from doing that before. It was all just licensing. So it's nice of Sun to release it on the GPL so that, you know, there's no issues with, you know, bundling it with Linux.
What kind of IDE are you running, Sean? What do you use?
I actually, for the longest time, I just used straight up Emacs and command line compiling, Jikes, and I use the Ant build tools. Lately, I've been using a software package for the Mac called Xcode. It's basically something that just Apple provides for free to developers. I have a G4 PowerBook that is my main development machine, and I just run Xcode, and I really just use the editor and with the Emacs key bindings, and that's pretty much it. I hate to get a lot of tools in the way, like GUI builders IDEs with a lot of features and refactoring and all that. You know, I like to just kind of keep it simple and keep it as a you know, direct to the code as I can get. So, and then for generating the installers, well, for building it, I use the Ant product, which is an Apache product, and that's really nice. And I used to use Makefiles, which were a real pain. And then for the installers, I use a commercial program called Install4j, and that's it's pretty good installer program. I'd recommend it.
Cool.
I've used MoneyDance in the past, and I just installed it. Play around with it a little while ago, again, and it's really slick.
Thanks.
It is. It's a nice install, easy process. It's very pretty looking.
Thank you. We've been putting a lot more work into just making the user interface as efficient and as kind of streamlined, and also as nice looking as possible. We actually had a designer look at the most recent version, and or actually the previous version, and see what they could do to just make it a little bit nicer. I mean, and it's amazing the difference that a little bit of eye candy will make. And not that MoneyDance is really loaded down with eye candy, but we could still use a little more, I think. I've really tried to make the interface streamlined and smooth. It does most things in one window, but you can open account registers in separate windows if you like. But it's possible to do everything within one window, so you can kind of keep focused if you like to work that way.
All right, let me ask you. I'm running AMD 64. Which version should I download? I see the Linux 6.86 version includes Java, Linux 6.86, and then generic Unix. I guess I should be running one of the x86 versions, right?
Mm-hmm. You can download one of the x86 versions if you'd like to do the installer and have the kind of mouseable double-click to run MoneyDance installer and launcher. There is a generic version called, I think, the generic Unix. And that basically is the one that, if you like, fiddling with shell scripts and stuff like that, I'd recommend that one because it doesn't include Java. You just download it, untar it, and then set a symlink to point to your Java directory for whichever version of Java you'd like to use. And it's more straightforward. You don't have to wonder what the shell scripts and all the launchers and stuff like that are doing. And you don't have to download a separate version of Java. So it's depends how much work you want to do to install it.
I see. You even have an OS 2 version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From the very beginning, I had a lot of OS 2 users, I think, who were in the same boat as Linux, where they just didn't have much in terms of personal finance software options. And I believe there are still quite a few OS 2 users who, who are using MoneyDance. As long as OS 2 has a reasonably up-to-date Java port, MoneyDance will run on it. I actually don't have an OS 2 machine anymore. I used to, but now basically I just trust that my OS 2 users will let me know if any version breaks on their system. But so far I've been pretty lucky.
Sure, there's got to be a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. Image out there of OS 2? I'm sure there's one out there. Somebody's probably put one together. Run on VMware, one of the other ones.
Yeah. I don't know how many users still run it, so I don't know if it's worthwhile, taking up the disk space to run an instance of OS 2. But,
well, put it to you this way. There's still people out there who run Amigas. I mean, I'm an old Commodore, that's what I started on, and I'm shocked that people still insist on running that stuff. It's old stuff,
Yeah. Well, the only OS 2 user group I knew of was up in the Philadelphia area, and I kind of gave them demos of MoneyDance a couple of times, and they've converted into a Linux user group now, or a generic alternative operating system user group. Yeah.
So, Sean, you created this program yourself. You started your own company, support it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started my own company, I think, in 1999. I do have to say, for about a year, from 2000 to 2001, I sort of merged with another company that was up in New York, out on Long Island. And they had business accounting software for Linux. And so I merged with them, you know, figuring, oh, it was a good fit. And it ended up, you know, not being a very good fit. So we ended up unmerging, and I got, you know, all the rights to Money Dance back, and you know, a little while later, you know, came out with a new version, and basically kept on going, you know, picked up where we left off from there. So for about a year, yeah, we actually were a company with an office and four developers, and since just been me, you know, writing the code.
Well, let me ask you, have you anybody else approached you about buying the product from you?
Nothing I can talk about now. And nothing in the works now. There are probably a lot of different companies that it might be a benefit to. I mean, you can think of like banks and you know, internet companies that, you know, want to tie into their own financial systems or something like that. But for the most part, you know, we're working pretty well independently, and honestly, it's a pretty fun thing to do, you know, to, you know, work on, you know, fix bugs and come out with new features and kind of, you know, support our community ourselves. It's I do have a part-time help with doing the customer support. It's based on, you know, email and web forums and mailing lists, and that's it's nice, and it really helps, you know, keep up with interacting with customers while I, you know, can, you know, work on the code and you know, designing and doing a few business arrangements. We do have a few business deals that are pretty nice. I don't know if you know, in the UK, there's a chain of stores called Tesco, which is pretty huge, and they sell a piece of software called Tesco Personal Finance, which is actually a copy of Money Dance with the name changed and a few features kind of taken out and just kind of customized a little bit. And so, deals like that are really, you know, pretty nice for us. And you know, we don't need to, like, get bought out by, you know, another company. I mean, we're doing pretty well on our own.
People want to know what company it was on Long Island in the IRC. They're asking.
Oh, it's AppGen, APPGEN, and I don't know if they're still around. I think they were bought, or the rights to their software were bought by another company a few years back, and so I'm not sure if that company, as it existed before, is still around.
All right, let me ask you, what's your install base? How large of a community do you have?
I'm not really sure. I don't really like track anything like that. If I had to guess, I'd say it's probably measured in the tens of thousands. Other than that, I don't really know.
How about your breakdown as far as, you know, OS X, Linux, Windows?
I ran a report on that about a year ago, and I think it's probably about, I would say maybe 50 to 60% Mac, maybe 20 to 30% Linux and FreeBSD, any other type of Unix, and the rest is, I would guess, Windows.
Well, it's a great piece of software, you know, for people who are on, you know, Linux and Mac, because, you know, software like Quicken, I don't know if it's even released on Mac, is it, Quicken?
It's funny, Quicken is on the Mac, but it's a completely different program on the Mac than it is on Windows, and so a lot of people actually prefer Money Dance to the Mac version of Quicken. On Windows, Money Dance, you know, a lot of people would rather use the Windows version of Quicken than Money Dance on Windows, unless they are, you know, kind of, you know, a lot of people use, like, Windows at work and Linux or Mac at home, and those type of people, you know, generally, you know, prefer Money Dance just because they can move back and forth between them. It's a lot easier to compete with Money Dance on the Mac just because it is such a different program, and you know, I guess Intuit puts less effort into that than they do the Windows version. We do get quite a few Windows users, who are just moving from Quicken for Windows to MoneyDance for Windows just because of, you know, some people tell us that they're upset about some of Intuit's sunset policies, you know, and that they'll turn off their version of Quicken, or at least the, you know, the transaction downloading part of it, you know, after a couple of years. So I think I actually had a copy of Quicken 2004. And it can no longer download transactions because they you know, they just disconnected that service, and there's no you know, it's not like they disconnected, you know, Quicken connecting to Intuit. They disconnected Quicken importing files that you download directly from your bank's website, you know, and you know, they disconnect their service where you could just download files directly from Quicken to from your bank's website using the OFX protocol. Yeah, so a lot of people, you know, view that as kind of an attempt by Intuit to do a forced upgrade, and you know, so they, you know, come over to MoneyDance and they say, hey, you know, you don't do that, and you know, that's great. Yeah, well, we don't turn off any services, and you know, although, you know, if you're connecting to your bank's OFX service directly, and you always have to, you know, worry about, you know, your bank turning off, you know, the service that was meant for old personal finance software. But, you know, with MoneyDance, we'll never disconnect these services from our side. And it's, you know, it's really not possible for us to disconnect these services from our side in a lot of the cases. You know, because when you set up a connection to your bank in MoneyDance, you're actually setting up a connection to your bank and not, you know, to MoneyDance.com and then to your bank. With MoneyDance, you can also set up connections manually. So if you know your bank's OFX URL and connection parameters, you can just enter them yourself and connect directly without ever going through MoneyDance.com with basically the referral service that we have to link people to their bank's OFX service.
It seems any time you get like a list of applications that, you know, people who think they want to switch to Linux and can't, mm-hmm, because they only, yeah, have like, you know, a handful of applications, always you hear about Quicken as one of them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that was one of my main reasons for continuing to develop MoneyDance, you know, long after it, you know, met my needs for, you know, just tracking your checkbooks. And I mean, that's one thing we hear in a lot of reviews, and yeah, I mean, basically, this is the kind of software that just about anybody, you know, can use and find useful. I mean, if you have a checkbook, if you have a bank account, you know, this is the kind of thing that you know, you might want in any computer operating system that you run. And so, you know, we get a lot of emails and from people who are saying, you know, oh, thank God, you know, for MoneyDance, because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to move, you know, from Windows to, you know, Linux, Mac, FreeBSD, whatever, without it. And there are, you know, there are other Linux versions, there are other Linux personal finance software too. And, you know, but I think the one of the things that people see about MoneyDance that is more useful in some ways is that it is cross-platform. So if they're moving from Windows to Linux, and maybe their wife has a Mac or something like that, then you know, you can use MoneyDance on all of those systems. You know, the exact same software will open the exact same data files, and you can have, you know, your finances in a data file on your shared network, and everybody in the house can use it, no matter what kind of computer they're using.
So when you purchase MoneyDance, it's for the household then.
Yeah, basically, I'm not sure exactly what the license says, but it's basically, we tell people, if you buy a license, use it on any computer that you use, or, you know, or any member of your family uses, and we're pretty slack about that. We don't, you know, like I'm not concerned about like so-called piracy and you know, things like that. You know, if you buy a license, you know, you're helping us out, so, you know, feel free to use it, you know, wherever you use MoneyDance, and we're not gonna. You know, we definitely don't get strict about interpretation of the license and stuff like that.
Let me ask you, as far as the banks that can work with MoneyDance, do you guys maintain a list on your website, right?
Yeah, we maintain a list that I keep track of, and it's a list of all the banks, their URL connections, and their connection parameters, which are the financial institution identifiers and organization identifiers. And that list is digitally signed using a DSA key, And the DSA public key is within MoneyDance. It's embedded in MoneyDance and is used to verify a digital signature on that list every time anybody connects. You know, you can imagine that that really has to be a very secure operation. And we use pretty big keys to make sure that's signed and safe. That's really the point where you don't want to just use any OFX information you see on the internet, because if you come across just any random OFX URL that claims to be for Wachovia Bank or something like that, if you go ahead and use it, you're sending your online banking login information, to that server, and so you better be sure it's the right one. So we take that really seriously, and. That's why it's not really possible to have like a public directory of OFX servers, because you'd have to trust whoever it was running that directory and contributing to that directory, and it's really just not possible, as far as I can tell, with a perfectly open system.
Now, some banks do charge for you to be able to import your data into any application, mm-hmm. be it Quicken or MoneyDance. So you definitely have to check with your bank whether or not they do that.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I just canceled my Bank of America account that I had, because they're charging like $10 a month for the privilege of connecting. That was for direct connections. For web-based connections, I think it was completely free. But if you wanted to connect directly from personal finance software, you had to pay close to $10 a month. I didn't think that was worth it for a service that was really saving them effort, saving them time. There are other banks that charge for that direct connection, but there are also plenty of banks that will provide that download access completely for free, that doesn't seem to affect the market share of these banks, whether they charge for that service or not. But I do hear a lot from customers who are complaining because their bank charges large fees, large monthly fees for something that saves them time and money. I don't know if I should recommend, banks that don't charge these fees, because I don't know all of them. I personally use NetBank, which is at netbank.com, and they're basically, I think they're all online bank, which is really a subsidiary of a normal brick and mortar bank, but they provide free download, free online bill payment, just a pretty nice service. One of the nice services, the online bill payment, I really have to recommend, just because it lets you basically just click a mouse a few times and send a payment to anybody who has a mailing address. What the bank will do is they will, look at the payee, the addressee, and see if they are in their online system, see if they are set up for direct wire transfers, and if they are, they'll just do a wire transfer. If they're not, they'll actually print a check and mail it to the address that you're trying to pay.
Yeah. So what are the real main features of MoneyDance besides, monitoring what you're doing with your bank account, mm-hmm. Checks going out, money coming in? What are some of the other big features in it?
One thing we focus on is where your money's going and try and provide useful graphs and reports to give you an idea of where things are going, without you having to do a lot of work, having to export to a spreadsheet and tabulate things. One of the other features is budgeting. We try and make a budgeting pretty simple process, and MoneyDance 2007, we actually added these little graphs that are added to the main toolbar of the program that will kind of give you a quick at-a-glance view of, where your income and expenses are and where they are relative to what you've budgeted. So you can say, okay, I'm budgeting, this much for each income or expense category on a monthly basis, weekly basis, et cetera, on a per-category basis. And the graph will show you, how close you are to your budget, and it'll show you your prorated expenses, you know, based on, you know, how far you are through the current month or year or whatever. And it will, you know, basically, you know, what I hope is just give everybody just a general idea of where their finances are at a high level. And then you can click on the graph to get more information about, you know, where, you know, which categories are under budget, over budget, you know, or, you know, right on budget. You know, there's also a net worth graph that'll just show your net worth over time, you know, in that toolbar. And then there's the external graph reports where you can get much more detailed information. Other features besides budgeting and graphing are investments. You know, investment work, we're actually working hard to improve the investment support for MoneyDance 2008, which we hope to make available late this year. It's, you know, you basically track any type of security, stock, bonds, mutual funds, et cetera, as well as cash balance for an investment account. And, you know, let you check performance of individual securities. We have a one big feature of MoneyDance is the extension system, which is kind of like a plug-in system, which has a digitally signed plugins, so that you can download an extension off the internet, and you know, it's signed using a similar mechanism to our, you know, online banking list, and yeah, just to verify that the extension is valid and not from, you know, some, you know, phisher or you know, or, you know, malicious third party. And with the, these extensions have various functions. You know, one of them is to just check for updates to MoneyDance and update you if there's a new version available. Another version will download, will look at all of your stocks and securities in MoneyDance and download their most recent prices, you know, from Yahoo. You know, we also have exchange rate downloaders, updaters. There's a bunch more. We actually have one of these extensions is a Python extension, which will give you a Python command line interface to MoneyDance and let you run Python scripts on your MoneyDance data. There's also a command line switch that'll let you run a Python script on a data file and either keep MoneyDance running or exit MoneyDance without displaying the GUI. You know, the Python stuff's really neat. We just had somebody on our developer mailing list you know, chime in that they're going to write a Bean Shell extension, which is another scripting language that I haven't used or really heard of much until now, which is just a Java-like scripting language that you know, will let you just kind of make quick changes and write, you know, quick little scripts that that work with your that work on your data. Let's see, we have a couple of extensions that are in perpetual beta mode. We've had one extension that's been in beta for probably 6 years now, and it's for synchronizing with your Palm. And so if you have a Palm device or even like any, it's not necessarily specific to Palm, because some you know, Palm applications like Splash Money will have a conduit that synchronizes with a QIF file. It'll basically put QIF files mirroring your Palm data in a, you know, special directory on your computer, and MoneyDance will synchronize with that directory, you know, read any new transactions, any new files that are in there, and import them. Let's see. I'm sure there are other extensions that I haven't mentioned. A couple extensions developed by other people besides me, which are, you know, one is a debt payoff calculator, which will look at your, you know, your liabilities, loans, credit cards, MoneyDance, and you know, calculate how long you have to pay them off, and it lets you play with various schemes to, you know, pay things off and pay off like the highest credit card, highest interest credit cards first, and basically show you how long it'll take at what, at each level of payment. Yeah, I'm sure there are a ton of features that I'm probably just forgetting about right now. I'd like, it'd be really cool if everybody just kind of downloaded MoneyDance and gave it a try. It's a pretty easy program to use, and it's pretty easy to get installed. And so if you have any trouble getting it running, or if you have any questions about the way it works, you know, just you know, email support@moneydance.com, you know, or post on the forum or join the mailing list, which I am on, and I try and contribute to as much as possible. You know, in between, you know, bug fixing and coding and you know, various administrative tasks.
Yeah. I just installed it. I'm looking at it right now. I'm running the version that doesn't come with Java.
Uh-huh.
x86, and it's fired right up. No problems. I'm in it right now.
Cool.
And it's, as you say, 100 transactions before the trial. And let me ask you, for our listeners, do you have any coupon codes we could use?
I'm not sure if I have that. I will set that up. Actually, I'll set that up right now, and I'll have it for you a little bit later in the show. And
cool.
Yeah, or is it possible to post it on IRC or your website or something?
Sure. Pop it on the IRC, and we'll put it in the forum, too.
Okay.
Cool.
Any thoughts on tax-based software?
Yeah, that's another of our perpetual beta extensions. Basically, writing tax software is something that don't really want to get into. It's kind of thing where you have to basically rewrite it or update it completely every year, and we just don't have resources to do that kind of stuff. And then you have to do the state-based, state-specific coding or plugins also, and that's just way too much effort and way too much liability, I would say. So what we've done is we've done an extension, and this is the perpetual beta part. We've done an extension that will export your data to a TXF file, and a TXF is I think it's a file. It's similar to a QIF file, and I'm sure it's probably invented by Intuit. And what it will do is just specify which what amounts go on which lines of which tax forms. And basically the extension will launch and allow you to associate different income or expense categories with different lines on your tax forms. And then so that once you've specified that mapping, it will export a TXF file that can be imported into software like TurboTax. And from there they can take over. We keep meaning to get this out of beta, every tax season. But every tax season comes and goes, and still just haven't gotten it released. And that's it's a little bit embarrassing, but there you have it.
So it looks like Money Dance by default is the dollar. Is it dollar format?
Well, it's actually when you first launch Money Dance and create a data file, it'll ask you what currency you want to use, and as a default. And Money Dance is completely multi-currency, we have a list of currencies that are in the default data file that you can choose. And in fact, a lot of kind of dead currencies, a lot of old currencies that are replaced by the euro are still in there. But it's possible to delete them, and the next version will not have those, and we'll have updated exchange rates in them as well.
I can sleep, Sean. I see you guys support the Zambian kwacha. I can go to bed tonight and sleep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we occasionally get requests for currencies. People say, "Hey, why don't you have this?" And currency that I don't know if under 100 people use or not. But it doesn't hurt us to add it in there. And I recommend whenever you start a new MoneyNet data file, just delete all the currencies that you know that you will never use. Because otherwise it'll just take up space on the screen. But MoneyDance is fully multi-currency. Every account or category can have a different currency in MoneyDance. And if you make a transfer from an account of one currency to an account of another currency, it'll display a little exchange rate field that lets you specify the exchange rate for that specific transaction. And that defaults to the exchange rate that MoneyDance has in its currency table. Which can be, synchronized using the Yahoo extension. It's really great. We have a lot of people, if you live in Europe, a lot of people really use the multi-currency features because they'll have a British pounds account, they'll have a euro account, they'll have accounts in whatever currencies are available in countries that are only just a short drive from their borders, and so it's I think we have pretty good multi-currency support, and in fact in any text field in MoneyDance or in any amount field, you can type in an amount, a space, and then the currency ID like USD or GBP or EUR, and it will convert from whatever currency you specify into the currency of that field or account, whatever field or account you're in, and you can also That brings up another point, is that every amount field, you can actually type complex expressions into there, you know, parenthesized, you know, formulas, and you know, MoneyDance will parse them, evaluate them, and replace what's in the text field with the result of whatever calculation you enter. You know, so it's usually pretty easy to you know, convert from one currency to another, or to say, you know, just. Yeah, just any kind of math expression. I just find it useful for a lot of cases, and it's not an obvious feature that the interface has. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. But I mean, any text field is you can enter all kinds of stuff like that, any formula, and you know, any exchange or any currency ID, and it'll convert directly from it.
I see you support the VAT tax for our European friends.
Yes. Yeah, the VAT tax is basically, it kind of works a little bit differently than the sales taxes that that I was used to in the U.S. And now that I'm living over here in Scotland, it's come in, you know, handy. Yeah, the VAT tax, it basically, you just set a VAT tax rate for different categories. And every time you record a transaction for that category, it'll split the amount into the amount that you've actually paid for whatever it is you're buying or paying for, and the amount that is actually going to taxes, so that at the end of the year you can generate a report that will show you, you know, how much you paid in taxes for all of your purchases. And I still don't actually use that myself, even though I'm over here, but I know of a lot of people, I kind of implemented that feature just going by instructions and descriptions from people who were in the UK and Europe on how it worked. And you know, one interesting fact is that over here in the UK, I think it was about a year ago, Quicken or Intuit actually pulled Quicken out of the market, out of the UK market. Completely. So, you know, the only personal finance software available in the UK is now, I mean, other than MoneyDance and other open source stuff, is Microsoft Money. And so that kind of opened up a pretty big market opportunity for us. With Intuit just pulling out completely. And I imagine there are a lot of other countries that, where Intuit doesn't release a version of Quicken. And people either, you know, use MoneyDance or some other software, or they use, you know, say, the U.S. dollar version of Quicken.
I'm looking at your list of extensions. You got quite a good number of them, mostly yours, but there are a few other ones too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And we have some partners working on a version of MoneyDance for India, and that will be kind of specific to the Indian market and Indian style investments and things like that, and they've written one extension that will actually kind of run a thread in the background and synchronize your stock quotes every so often, however often you specify, and it's a pretty useful extension, and you know, the other stuff they're working on is pretty neat. Yeah.
A credit card payoff calculator.
Mm-hmm.
Investment profits. It looks like it's pretty useful.
Yeah, this is good stuff. And anybody, you know, as I say, anybody can write an extension. We the API to all the MoneyDance, core, basically the core of MoneyDance is all open. If you go to the developer link on MoneyDance.com, you can, you know, access all of our data model API and basically, browse the interface for every part of MoneyDance that that the extensions have access to. And then some, and it's pretty open. I mean, Intuit and Microsoft don't do that. You know, of course, like GNUcash and KMyMoney and the open source products, you know, are definitely much more open than us. But but we're pretty open as far as a proprietary piece of software can be. You know, we're obviously not in the free software, you know, or you know, true open source mold. But I've spent a lot of time using Linux and FreeBSD, and I really appreciate the openness of that stuff. And and I've always told people that, you know, if ever, you know, I wasn't going to work on MoneyDance anymore, you know, or if, if I was, you know, if anything ever happened to me or whatever, it would just, you know, be open sourced. So.
Well, let me ask you, is this your primary source of income, this program, or do you have other things that you work on besides this?
No, I have a day job that is working for a company that's actually in the United States called the Corporation for National Research Initiatives, and I basically do kind of distributing computing and research into kind of architectures for information security systems on the internet. It's a small nonprofit company that we do work funded a lot by DARPA and things like that, and some private companies and. My day job is just really interesting, and I almost like wouldn't give up my day job, even if Money Dance were making twice as much money as that. I just really enjoy what I do, it's kind of tough enjoying my day job and enjoying Money Dance so much because there's just not enough hours in the day to do all the stuff that I want to do with both of these things.
So right now, Money Dance is selling for $29.99, which is pretty good, compared to some of the other software that's out there. And, granted, it's not free software. Do you get a lot of heat from, some of the free software people about the application?
No, almost none. I used to have people saying, hey, why don't you make it, open source and all that. There are enough open source alternatives out there that I think the people that, for whom, open source and the freedom associated with, GPL and free software, I think that for those people that there's enough options for them that they don't, really even notice Money Dance probably. What we get is the people that really just want something that works and don't really have a lot tied up in the freedom aspect of it and whether they can have the rights to all the source code and the rights to redistribute it. I've thought about releasing the source code but not putting it under, say, a GPL or a free license, saying anybody who pays for it can get the source code. But it's just so hard to, force something like that. Inevitably it would, just get away from us and, probably be forked or something like that, whether legally or not. And so, we have, had requests for that, but I definitely wouldn't say we, get any heat for it, or anything. And, because like I said, there are plenty of options.
It seems really responsive and quick, just playing around with it. It's really fast and it's... Seems to run almost native, like it's a native, C++ program or something.
Yeah, we don't use too many toolkits, and I don't want a lot of, bloated code getting in between, the user and their data, so we try and make it as lean as possible, also realizing that, Java is a bit memory hungry and all of that, so we try and compensate for that with just really efficient, really lean code whenever possible.
Plus, I'm sure it helps. I'm also running version 1.6 of the virtual machine, Java machine.
Yeah. Well, every Java virtual machine gets a little bit bigger,
yep.
Every time around. So it's
the library listing is enormous now, but it seems to run pretty good though. It's a lot better.
Yeah. Well, there's so many optimizations built into Java these days that it's you read. Benchmarks where they say, this Java code is faster than the equivalent C code. And you just wonder, how on earth is that possible? And it's all the kind of, I imagine a lot of it is hyperbole and just exaggeration, but, a lot of it is kind of the benefits of runtime optimization and the fact that it's possible to optimize something while it's running in addition to when it compiles and, potentially even exceed, native code. But I don't know. I hope I'm seeing the benefits of that.
Well, people are more than free to use other, free and open source programs like GNUcache. If that satisfies your needs, then great. But for some people, that doesn't satisfy your needs, then this is an option.
Mm-hmm.
And you addressed a real void for Linux, years ago, you're still going, and I think it's great.
Yeah, and it's funny because what is a void on Linux is an even bigger void on OS2 and also something of a void on the Mac. So it's and the fact that it's cross-platform just really, if Money Dance weren't cross-platform, I'm sure it wouldn't be you know, used today at all, you know, or out of just kind of open sourced it and let someone else take over a long time ago. You know, but the open source aspect of it, or the cross-platform aspect of it just means that it's, you know, it's applicable to so many more users, and the potential audience out there is just so much bigger.
What's the minimum Java virtual machine you need?
With this version is Java 1.3.
1.3, that's pretty old.
Yeah, that's probably, I think 1.3 was probably out in, 2001 or something like that. That's another thing, is a lot of Java software requires the latest and greatest version of Java, and I always try and keep at least a version or two behind the most current API, because when you're dealing with end user software, you know, something that, you know, everybody and their grandmother uses, you know, your grandmother isn't going to have the latest version of Java most of the time. And so, we want to run on, you know, older computers, you know, computers that may not, you know, have the resources necessary to run the, you know, the latest version of the Java virtual machine and all of the, the 500 packages or, you know, libraries that it includes, you know, whatever the number is.
I'm just checking out your preferences. I'm going through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Going back to the online banking, how difficult is it to get a non-supported bank, get support from a non-supported bank, and how willing are they to work with you and your application?
We've only had a couple of banks that were actually voluntarily, you know, working with us. The banks that MoneyDance work with are banks that support the direct connections to their OFX servers. And so basically, as long as they have an OFX server, they don't need to work with us. And so MoneyDance can just connect, and, you know, if their user has an account on that system, they can log in with MoneyDance and download the transactions and all of that. And in fact, you know, it's not the best situation, but, you know, a lot of times we have to tell our customers, if you want to connect to online banking, just tell your bank you're using Quicken, you know, whatever the latest version of Quicken is for Windows, and that's how that's what their bank uses to set up their connection, enable their account for these direct connections, and then they just go into MoneyDance and connect, because, you know, MoneyDance kind of connects as if it were Quicken. And so it connects in the exact same way. So if their account is set up for Quicken, it's basically set up for MoneyDance, if we support their bank. And so it doesn't require any interaction between us and the bank, really, other than for me to just test the bank's connection and just make sure that it works. And, we've had issues before with different versions of SSL or TLS not working with certain banks. And I think Java supports SSL 3 or higher, which is TLS 1.0 or higher. And there were banks that, like Charles Schwab, that used like SSL 2, so MoneyDance wouldn't work with them. They do work with them now because they have upgraded, but other than those compatibility issues, there aren't really that many compatibility issues, and we don't, yeah, like I said, we don't really have to talk to the banks as long as they support the OFX standard.
Now, I heard on another show, I think it was a lot of Linux links, and he was trying out some financial applications. He said that there were some issues with a certain type of service that banks mm-hmm. have been using. They recently started switching to that can cause some problem with online banking.
Within MoneyDance or within all personal finance software?
I thought he said it was within MoneyDance that there was some kind of... Because I know, like, the credit union I go through just implemented something called Safe2Connect, which uses an image-based authentication type thing where they, you know, you log in and then they say, is this your image, and you agree to it and put your password. I guess that's not a problem then.
No, and there was recently a law that was enacted saying that to log into online banking websites, you need to have two-factor authentication, which is, where you just have like two separate items that authenticate you, and so you can log in, and it was to provide added security, and also a lot of banks like Bank of America, and I'm sure plenty of others were doing, like you said, they're showing like a specific image, and if that image didn't show up on their website, then it was supposed to be a sign for you not to enter your login information. I think it was intended to prevent phishing attacks. I'm not sure like how successful it was. You know, I'm not sure if people noticed like the absence of an image like that. These factors I think basically apply to web-based online banking and not the type of direct connections that MoneyDance and a lot of other software uses.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
So on your day job, are you a programmer? Did you say you were a programmer?
I'm a programmer. I do, design and kind of, my title is a research scientist, so it's a little more grandiose than, it probably actually is, but, it's a fun job. It does involve a lot of coding, but also a lot of design and kind of system, kind of design and work. But it's a lot of fun. And, I think you can go to the company's website, www.cnri.reston.va.us. And, it's a pretty interesting stuff. Some of it is, source available. So you can see some of my code and kind of see for yourself the quality of, my programming. One of the products is a handle system, which is a distributed identifier system, kind of like a DNS system that is for individual documents. So you can assign a single identifier to a digital object or any digital resource. So that'll allow you to refer to that via that using that identifier instead of say the URL, which might change. As time goes on. And it's designed to be kind of a part of an architectural system which information is stored in objects instead of servers or pages on servers and files and file names and things like that. And it's a pretty interesting system. You can read a lot about it at the CNRI website, and lots of papers there and RFCs describing all the work that we've done. But it's really cool stuff.
So I take it you telecommute for your job.
yeah. I'm actually I've been telecommuting since I think 2000, and first from Richmond. The company is in Northern Virginia, and. It's been a lot of fun, and I've been like incredibly lucky to be able to do this. And so, about a year ago, or actually about a year and a half ago, I talked to them about kind of extending my telecommuting range across the Atlantic, and they weren't too happy about it, but they let me do it, which is pretty nice. And so I work for a U.S. company in the U.K. and the time difference is about 5 hours, so it's sometimes that can be a little tricky, but we do video conferences with over the internet with my boss and people at CNRI just about every day, and it's almost like being there. And I fly back next week for about a week's worth of meetings that I do every quarter, and it's I tell you, it's, telecommuting is the best way to work, I'd say, by far. And and I can count myself very lucky that I'm able to do that.
That's cool. Now, do you find, I've asked this of a couple other people, do you find that by telecommuting you end up actually putting in more hours a day or per week than you would if you were going to an office every day?
Yeah, definitely. Because you can just, sit down and start hacking. I mean, at least with, in developing software, it's really easy to just kind of sit down and get into it and also to pick it up around 11 o'clock at night when everybody else goes to bed and end up coding until ridiculous hour in the morning. I'm the kind of person that, when I, get down coding, when I actually get on a roll with something, I just can't stop. And so, sometimes I'll end up, just being so late in the morning that, I almost might as well not even go to bed anymore. But that's the time when I do my best work, a lot of the time. So, but yeah, telecommuting, you do find that. I mean, telecommuting, you do have to, if you work from home, then it's, you do have to be careful not to, get distracted by other things like, oh, and the dishes need doing or something like that. But once you get over that part of it, it's be easy, and I think you end up doing a lot more work than, you do when you go into the office, just because, when you go into the office, you have the social interactions there, and you end up kind of chatting around the water cooler a lot more than, you would, otherwise. And so, without that social interaction, you have a lot more, many more of your hours are actually spent doing productive stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
As long as you don't have distractions.
Yeah. You do lack the social interaction, but you can make that up in other ways.
True. there was a question that came across the IRC way back when we started, and I'm interested in this. You had said that Money Dance was originally open source, and then you closed it. What license was it originally under, and how did you go about closing it so that you wouldn't end up violating the original license?
It was originally under the artistic license, which is, I'm not sure if it's actually considered free according to the Free Software Foundation, but I think it is considered open source by the Open Source Initiative. Basically, it was, I released it and under that license, and nobody else contributed any code to it. So when you have a license on something, there's the license, but there's also the copyright owner. So the person that owns the copyright outright can put whatever license they want onto something. But if someone else were to contribute to it, I wouldn't be able to change the license on their code because they contributed it using that license. But since nobody else had ever contributed anything, it was all my copyright, and so I could change it to whatever license I wanted to at that point. There weren't any other copyright owners whose rights, were violated by, taking a closed source. I think there are other examples of software going from open source to closed source. If there's only single contributors or, a few contributors, if all the contributors or all the copyright owners sign off on it and say, let's change the license or whatever, then, it's possible to do it. Money Dance 1.0, I mean, if someone found the code for it around on the internet somewhere, and, it may be out there, I don't know. I don't have a copy of it anymore, I don't think. But if anybody found it, they could pick it up and start development off from that. Although I'd say they'd probably be better off starting from scratch, with how many changes that have been made to it since then. That's basically the story on that.
Cool.
Yeah, and also, I mean, and one thing I really want to avoid is I don't want anybody to be locked into Money Dance. If someone wants to convert to another piece of software, they totally can. And in fact, within Money Dance, you can choose the file export menu, and if you export to the Money Dance XML format, you can get basically every bit of information that's in Money Dance exported to an XML file, which you can use to, you can write a script to convert it to any other format that you like. It contains absolutely everything that's in the native Money Dance file. The native Money Dance file format is binary file, just for the sake of efficiency. It kind of has to be in order to be, serialized and deserialized quickly enough. We don't use XML natively, but, you can import or export to it. And so you can, that stuff is completely wide open, that XML data. And also, if anybody wants, the code to read or write the data files, people have emailed and asked for it, and I've just given it to them. Just give them the code to that stuff, because I don't want anybody to feel like they're locked in. If someone's using Money Dance, I want it to be by choice.
Well, that's good.
Sean, you did a great job.
Thank you.
You filled a void, and we appreciate it. You know, the free software purists, you know, if they don't like your product, they don't have to use it. No one's forcing them to use it.
Right, right. Yeah, and we're actually, I mean, the funny thing is that since MoneyDance runs on Windows, we're actually being viewed as competing directly with Microsoft and Intuit now. And there are some articles out there actually comparing the three programs, and I mean, I was pretty amazed, but you know, I'd love to see MoneyDance being, you know, compared in the same review as Microsoft Money and Quicken, and so, I mean, that's really the goal, is to come up with a piece of software that's, you know, yeah, like I said, not just fills the void, but, you know, actually competes and, you know, does better than, you know, the software that is on, you know, running on Windows on the more mainstream system. You know, instead of just MoneyDance just being an adequate replacement for people that are coming to Linux, we want it to be, you know, something better, something that they can use, yeah, that is so much better than, you know, these other programs, yet is still cross-platform and can be used, you know, on Linux and yeah, be a part of the Linux environment.
Well, keep up the good work. We hope, you know, some Linux people will try it out, and I'm going to check it out. You know, I've been looking for some financial software, and we're looking for those coupon codes.
Great. Oh, I just got that set up. I haven't tested it yet, but if you go to moneydance.com/TLLTS, that will take you to the purchase page where you can purchase a half price version of MoneyDance license. It's basically the upgrade. If you've you know, with MoneyDance, our upgrade policy is pretty liberal. If you ever owned any previous version of MoneyDance ever, your purchasing the latest version is free. Is half price. If you purchase MoneyDance any time after January 1st, 2004, then it's a free upgrade. So and you know, we try and do free upgrades like for pretty much everybody. And because we're trying to, you know, win new users, not, you know, fleece our existing, you know, customers who, you know, have already been generous enough to to pay for the software. And so we try not to charge existing customers for upgrades, you know, no matter how big the upgrade. And if you go to moneydance.com/TLLTS, you can get the half price upgrade, even if you never ran MoneyDance before.
Awesome, man.
I'll keep that link up for a while, because I don't want people purchasing MoneyDance without trying it first. You know, download the trial version and check it out. Make sure it, you know, suits you, we try and make it so that people have a sufficient amount of time and can really get to know the software and see if it meets their needs before they, you know, are required to, you know, actually pay out any money for it.
Well,
Sean, thanks for staying up, you know, really late and talking to us. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
We keep doing a good job.
All right, I'll try. and also, if your users want to keep up to date with the very latest version of MoneyDance, if you go to moneydance.com/preview, it has the kind of, you know, up-to-the-minute builds, and I usually update that. I don't know. I'd like to say it's weekly, but it's probably less than that. More updates. So if you get the main MoneyDance.com version, there are pretty significant updates to the preview version over that. If you're happy running what I consider beta level software, although it's probably a little better than beta. Yeah, I try and keep the quality pretty high throughout.
Cool. Well, thanks for everything. We appreciate talking to you, and best of luck in the future. Maybe we can talk again.
Well, sounds good to me. All right, thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
And that was Sean.
That was Sean.
$15.
No, that may be linked. You never know.
I mean, you can be. You can run GNU cache, you know. But you don't get all the features that MoneyDance has. So try it out. If you like it, buy it, man. I'm all for independent developers, man. We heard that, Dan.
What?
Exactly. You're breaking wind over there, aren't you?
Sorry. That's Link. That's Link.
Is it?
Or not.
Yeah, that's his high-speed internet access.
Woo! I was
going to say.
Comcast, baby. Comcast.
It's so fast, he already finished the show. He's in. He's at 11:30 right now. That's why he keeps cutting out.
He's just waiting for you to upload now.
Yeah. Internet at the speed of light.
Hey, isn't that a Verizon commercial or something like that?
I don't know. It could be. It could be. I tried out an applet today. The desk bar applet. Have you guys seen that? I know they talked about it on the Linux Action Show, and I've seen it on on my laptop, but I haven't used it. So I figured, because they said it was like, it's close to Quicksilver. And I said to myself, well, you know, I remember using Quicksilver on OS X, and I liked it. So I tried it out today, and it didn't work the way I wanted it to. I had to, like, go in under gedit to hack it to set the hotkey. It wouldn't let me set the hotkey to alt space. It kept telling me it wouldn't do it, so I had to do it under gedit, like editing the registry under gedit, gconf editor, sorry, and force it to alt space. But what ends up happening is I do the alt space and it starts the dialogue, and I try and type something in, and I gotta click on the desk bar applet to allow me to type anything in there. I mean, it pops up. The last entry's there, I believe, but it's highlighted in that gray, like, highlight that would tell me if I started typing, it would overwrite whatever was in there. But it won't let me do it until I actually focus on it. Now, it's quite possible that that's a glitch due to Barrel, because I was running Barrel at the same time, but I'm not sure. I didn't invest too much research into it until I actually stopped it and restored my alt space to my preferred run application, GNOME run application. But yeah, that was my experience with that. And another thing I tried out, they have a GNOME application installer, which is supposedly looks really nice. I don't know if you guys have tried this out. Now, I'm not exactly sure if this is an Ubuntu only or if it's Debian-based or whether it'll actually do anything aside from Debian packages or Ubuntu packages. But I noticed that in one of my updates. It had that listed, and I, you know, looked around and finally found out how to launch this application, and it came up. And it is a nice interface. It's looking a lot nicer to, kind of like Synaptic. Not as bulky as Synaptic, and you go through and it has nice little icons for a lot of the applications and a good description. I installed a ton of games off of there. It has a lot of commercial support too. I'm not sure if the packages are similar to, you know, the same thing as Synaptic, but it was nice. It worked well. I didn't have a problem. The only thing is, you know, that's like another application that they're throwing out there. I mean, you got Aptitude, you have Synaptic, and now you have this GNOME application installer. It would be nice if they would have focused a lot of that development on the GNOME application installer and put it into Synaptic to give Synaptic those nice little icon support and better categories and definitions when you're actually looking at something. Have any of you guys tried that?
No.
Well, you all suck.
Me, well, you suck.
No, I don't suck. I'm the one who actually tried it.
Oh, I got a two-week-old screaming baby upstairs, so.
Well.
But I do have time to play Call of Duty, too.
Yeah, how's that running for you?
Awesome, man. I love it.
You're running that. Are you running it under Sedega? Or are you running that just under
crossover.
One? Crossover.
Crossover, yeah. Latest version of Crossover supports it. That and Half-Life 2.
You playing Half-Life 2 also?
A little bit. I like Call of Duty better. I'm into the World War II stuff. And it's cool because you could play like all the different campaigns. You could play as the Russians in the Russian front against the Germans, the Battle of Stalingrad. You play as the British in North Africa against the Germans. Then there's a whole bunch of American campaigns. Right now I'm doing the Americans during the D-Day invasion.
Wow.
I haven't done the multiplayer yet. I've been playing single player because I want to be decent enough before I get killed with the group play.
You want to learn to shoot somebody first.
Yeah, shoot, duck, that kind of thing. Throw grenades, you know. But it's really great. The graphics are really good. The audio works flawlessly. The only negative thing that I notice is that when you come out of the game, it leaves your desktop in the highest possible resolution that your video card supports. So you just have to restart X and it will go back to your default resolution.
There's another way to do that.
I'm sure there is.
What is that? X, Win... Can't remember what it... Forget what it... There's a way to do that. It's an X... Let me see if I can remember. Damn, what was that? There's a way that you can... And I used to do it a few times, sometimes when I have a game crash or something. A game that does like a lower resolution and you end up like at 800 by 600 or 320 by 240 or some wacky resolution. There's a way, an easy way to get it back.
What I notice is when it starts up, I can tell it's cycling through the resolutions for like a split second. I can see the desktop at a really low resolution. So it's probably cycling through, checking what the video card settings are and what it could do before the game starts up.
Uh-huh.
But it works fine, though. I'm not a big gamer, to be honest, but it's been a while since I played something decent, so I have a decent video card, so I said, you know what, let me try these couple games, see how they're like. And they're good, man.
I can't remember.
Now, what are you running? Are you running Crossover, Dan, or are you doing Zodega?
No, I have Crossover. When I was playing World of Warcraft, I was using Crossover. I haven't played it in a couple of weeks, so. But I've been using Crossover. I shelled out my whatever it was for Crossover, and it runs pretty well. I was kind of skeptical about doing a Zodega thing, because that's like another monthly charge. But I don't know, the Crossover office works really well.
Now, what's the whole deal with Zodega? They're bastards, right? They don't give anything back to the wine community at all. They basically just take from it, right?
That's what I've heard. I don't know 100%. We don't have anybody. I've never had anybody from Zodega on, but apparently, from what I've heard in the past, is they take what the wine project puts out and provide their own extensions, particularly for... or tweaks to get certain games running and work with the game companies to do that in some occasions, but don't contribute those tweaks back or whatever they do or enhancements they make back to the wine proper project like Crossover does.
Bastards.
Yeah.
You've got to give back to the community, man. And I know Code Weavers definitely gives back to the community.
Yeah, that's
a lot of the fixes and improvements, they put it right back into the wine. They give it right back to the community. So, you know, if you're going to spend money on, you know, something to run some Windows applications, they're as good as anybody else, man. It's good because, you know, if you don't want to run a whole full implementations of, say, like Windows in a virtual machine, you know, Crossover is perfect. It's thin, it's light, doesn't take up that much space on your hard drive. And it works pretty well for the applications that they support. What are the Windows applications you're running, Dan?
That's it. I don't run any Windows app. Aside from World of Warcraft, that's the only thing I've run. I played Half-Life under Wine. That was way back in the day. And go ahead.
My wife insists on running Word for a couple of things she does with it. So that's why I have it.
Shame
on her. And
it works
fine, you know? Yeah, she still runs OpenOffice, but for certain things, she wants it to look exactly the way it's supposed to. So No big deal. You know, she gets her word, I get my Call of Duty too.
Now, were you originally saying that Call of Duty 2 wasn't supported under Wine?
Not the box version. Not the box version. You got to get it the Steam version.
Okay.
Which does that online authentication deal. Has something to do with the piracy protection, you know.
Right.
DRM deal. Because you're going through Steam, the Steam engine takes care of all that crap. So, you know, you're just doing the game portion. And you download the game from them when you purchase it.
Uh-huh. Did you actually go out and buy the box version first?
No. I went to the crossover site and they have the applications listing. And under the Steam category, they tell you which games are supported. And it says in there, you know, not the box version.
Uh-huh.
It's the same price, pretty much.
But they just get you.
It's bad, you know. It's content, you know. You pay for it.
Right.
You don't want to pay for it. Don't pay for it.
Yeah.
I'm a gun to add.
All you people out there wanting everything for free, get your hands out.
Exactly, leechers.
Giving all Someone's the rest of us in money. The community a bad name.
Exactly. Someone's got to make money out there. Got to make a living.
Yeah.
Got to feed our babies, man.
Pat's got to feed his baby.
Exactly.
Babies.
I got to feed my kids, man. Man, I got two kids. Remember that's from?
What is that from?
Man, I got five kids. Total Recall.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Oh, it's a great movie. That's a classic. You had Schwarzenegger, Paul Verhoeven, you know, the man behind RoboCop and Starship Troopers. And Sharon Stone when she was still hot. And Kuatu. Definitely a winning combination in my book.
Yeah. Man, oh man, Total Recall.
Anyway, how about the FUD, man? It's pretty thick coming from Microsoft.
Yeah, that's really got everybody in an uproar.
Yeah, what the hell, man? It's
thick coming from those people.
Like they kicked it up, though, a notch recently.
Oh, with the patent issue.
Well, yep. But we'll see what happens, you know. A lot of people are saying it's not, you know, it won't be Microsoft that fires that first gun, and it's going to be some patent-holding company. Well, what's his name? From,
Shuttleworth.
Yeah, that. Mark Shuttleworth. What's his name? Yeah, he'll be back on the show after that.
I was going to say, you're doing really good for public relations there.
Yeah.
What's his name again?
What the hell is his name?
The guy I pissed off.
Yeah.
The astronaut dude.
Yeah, the astronaut dude I pissed off, right? So I don't know, man. Ubuntu's really, really taking off. I mean, what? Dell saying they're going to be dropping it on systems. You know, we contacted the Linux laptop people, and they have agreed to do.
That's the one. That's the one that Dave Yates talked about, right?
Yeah, Dave Yates has that little ad on the site, and I'd be interested to see how that's going to impact their business.
Now, this is just another vendor, right? That does pre-installs of Linux on laptops, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like what System 76 does.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see. Well, yeah, System 76, in a sense, I don't want to say they build their own systems, but they have more of a generic based system, whereas the Linux laptop is using a Dell, kind of like Emperor Penguin, Emperor Linux. I'll be back in 1 second. Hold on.
Okay.
The screaming was in the background there, wasn't it?
Yeah, American Idol just ended.
Oh, well. So there's another new idol now?
So, Alan, have you installed Linux on your Apple laptop now? Have you got around
Not
to it?
Not on the laptop, but I did get feisty on the... when I was over getting the spoils from Link's house before he moved on it, the ton of computer stuff I came home with on it. I got a another iMac, the old versions, the colored versions. This is a, what color is it? It's an
lime green?
Easy for me to say. No, it's one of the blue ones. It's not a blueberry, it's an indigo. Easy for me to say on it. But I did get Feisty running on that one. And it actually works pretty good. I was going to use it tonight for the show, but the hard drive in it, I think, is going bad on it because it's got that like lovely metal-on-metal whining sound on it. But it does actually work. It's just really, really loud, and I figured, you know, we've got enough noise on the show with the super server down at Dan's house, so we didn't really need to hear the metal-on-metal sound up here. But it does actually work. It works very well. It's got a bit of a finicky CD-ROM drive, so it took me a couple of different burns on different machines before I got a CD that actually worked in it. But everything went on there. Went on really well.
Is Link back?
Is that Link?
He's having problems. He tried hooking in with Gizmo. Gizmo's pretty easy to get going.
Is that me?
There you go.
It's me.
Talk a little farther from the mic.
Yeah, it's
Whoa!
Like,
that's
better.
Am I blowing you away?
You're
blowing everybody. Blowing everybody away.
All right, let me see if I can adjust some of the sound here.
So what are you using, Gizmo?
Yeah, using Gizmo right now.
It works pretty well, man. The quality's real good.
Sounds really nice.
Wait a second. It's closed software. You can't use it.
No. That's not me, man. I don't have a problem with that.
You use what works, man.
Where the hell is the mic adjustment on this thing, though? That's what I want to know.
There is one. I don't have it fired up, but...
I haven't used it in a while, so...
I assume there is one somewhere, but I can't find it.
There is one.
Actually, the only time I ever use it is over on when I use the little Nokia.
There is one.
Do, 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 do.
Okay, you see on the bottom there, Link? Oh, wait a second, that's not it. Hold on.
Uh-huh.
let me see.
That lever. No, not that lever. The other lever.
The
other slider.
The other one. No, not that one.
Just talk softer.
Preferences. There you go. Preferences. Audio. And then you have the volume levels. Input volume, output volume. See it?
Aha. So we want to mold the input volume down about here. How's that?
Sounds better,
yeah. That sounds pretty good.
It's not on 11 anymore.
All right, cool.
But this goes to 11.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So cool. Alan finally got Feisty running on his machine.
Awesome.
Yeah, like I said, it works really nice.
You happy?
Am I happy? Well, I was happy I had it in the first place. I got to collect all the rest of the colors now.
Yeah. What's the matter? Ship Brown doesn't do it for you anymore?
No. I mean the iMac colors. I got to collect all the rest of the
colors. Oh, you mean those colors, the fruity colors.
Got green, I got blue now. I need the orange and... Snow, I think they called one of them, and the psychedelic version one would be cool.
What is it, like a
psychedelic, man?
It's like a tie-dye version.
Well, if you're going to do a talk at Apple, you got to make sure you're doing it on an Apple laptop. You guys heard about that, right?
Jeremy Open? That was from a while ago, wasn't it, though?
That was from a while ago. That was like a year ago, I think. It just popped up again. Is that Dan farting again? I can hear him, man. He's peeling the paint again. You know, I miss going to Dan's house, but that's one thing I don't miss, I have to be honest. Dan's a good guy, man. We love him.
Dan crapping the chair, huh?
Peeling the paint, cracking the windows. Ugh. Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, he used to nail the windows shut, so he'd trap us in the room and he'd gas us to death.
Whatever works, though, you know?
Yeah. So have you had a chance to see if there's a local lug down there, Link?
There's a whole bunch of them down here. I don't know about Downingtown. I'll have to check into that. But in Philly, there's a giant lug, and it has different subsections, I guess. Like there's a Western Philly lug and an Eastern Philly lug kind of thing. And they'll meet in different places. And in fact, the Western Philly lug meets occasionally around Downingtown, I guess the next city over, maybe Malvern or something like that. But I haven't had a chance to go to any of the meetings or anything because I've been, you know, crazy busy lately.
You near Malvern?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, that's where I catch the train in order to get into Philly.
My company has an office down there. We have a division down there. That area, though, gets pretty bad traffic, man. Around rush hour, holy crap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, which is exactly why I take the train. That's what I tell myself every day.
I kind of miss that, man, being able to read and do things while you're commuting.
Yep.
So it's a little difficult to read a book while I'm driving my car, you know, without taking somebody out.
Audio books.
I can't read in a moving vehicle at all.
I listen to podcasts. Driving and listen to podcasts, and a podcast, I can devote that much attention to while I'm driving.
Yeah, well, it becomes background sound at that time.
No, I can actually listen to it. Oh, here you go. Somebody posted the psychedelic iMac for
me.
You. Oh, that's your Flower Power Tiger Life?
Yeah.
Your hippie dad.
Yeah, it's a little expensive for me. But he's got two of them, so. You want to go for it?
I won't be buying a Mac or any other Apple anytime soon. But that's just me.
Oh, that's a neat looking colored one, though.
Ooh, I'll be right back. I got an animal emergency.
An animal emergency? I don't think I want to know. It involves a ferret. It involves a ferret going somewhere where it shouldn't go.
The ferret got into the refrigerator.
Oh, man.
So that was the little one.
He's good, man.
I know you popped it on the IRC before, but for the people who don't have IRC.
Little peanut, man. He's doing well. He's on the 3-hour cycle of sleep, eat, and poop. So it's a little tiring, you know, between me and my wife, though. We're dealing with it. It's a little more challenging because, you know, we have a 3.5-year-old, you know, son, too. So, you know, when I was with the first one, it's pretty much, you know, just sleep in between feedings and stuff. And, you know, now it's like my son wants to be entertained in between, so it's a little more challenging. Plus the other thing is we got to deal with, you know, my son, you know, he's not the primary 100% focus anymore. So
yeah.
he's got to deal with that a little bit, you know. There's a little bit of a transition, but I think he's doing well. He's really excited to have a little brother.
You teach him how to change diapers, that way, you know, he can help out.
He wants to help. He's like, I give him the bottle. He comes over to me, my son. He's like, Daddy, can I hold the bottle for the baby? And he does
guarantee,
help.
Guarantee you won't want to help anymore if you teach him how to do diapers. You're like, get rid of that kid now, Mommy.
Nah, he's good. He wants to help out. Like, if we're changing the baby diapers, he comes over and he gives us a diaper. He's like, Daddy, can I help?
Just wait till it smells and he won't come over anymore.
It does smell. All those people that say newborn poop doesn't smell, it doesn't smell like for the first 2 days. After that, it smells pretty bad.
And then the world comes into view, and it's like, oh, God, we got to make this thing stink, too. Got to make them human.
They're, I tell you what, though, man, they're all different. This, he's so much different than my first boy. The personality is going to be completely different. I can see it already. But it's great, man. I'm loving it. My wife is dealing with it pretty well. You know, the recovery is definitely a lot easier than having to do a C-section. C-section's tough, man. It's basically major surgery. Well, they cut you open.
Say,
you know?
Yeah, they cut you open, yeah.
I mean...
That never to me sounds very normal.
Yeah, it's... You know what it is, though, man? A lot of these doctors, they you know, they don't want to get sued for malpractice, so they go right to the C-section. You know, years ago, it used to be the C-section was like the last thing, you know? You know, if there's an emergency and there's no other way, you do a C-section. Now it's like, oh, okay, let's do a C-section.
Yeah, we'll schedule it down for next Thursday.
Exactly.
Whether it's ready or not.
Yeah,
I remember you saying that.
Like, the week later, she was supposed to go in, like, on a Thursday, and the baby she wound up going into labor, like, a week and a half early, so. But he was 2 weeks early, this one, so. He wanted to come out. He didn't want to stay inside.
Got tired of it.
Yeah, you know. My life is small, you know. There's only so much room in there.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, you know.
So. Much better.
It's going well. It's going well, though, man. It's already 2 weeks in, and it's going well.
Link, you got to talk just a little softer.
A little softer.
Well, not a whisper, but...
Are you on Gizmo now?
I'll turn the volume down a little bit, yeah. Apparently, Gizmo boosts the audio all by itself, doesn't it?
It's nice and clean, man.
Bumped it right back up to like 80%. How's that? Better?
That's much better. That's much better.
All right.
The quality's really good, man. We talked to several people through Gizmo, through the ASRIC server. It sounds phenomenal, you know? Sean sounded really good. He was in freaking Scotland. And who else? I think Dan Dennedy we talked to, he was on Gizmo.
Mm-hmm.
He's in California. The quality's excellent. I think it sounds great.
Sounds good. It sounds really, really good from my end, too. I was using IAXCOM before, and it really sucked horribly bad. But using Gizmo has just cleaned everything right up nice, you know?
And you're not dropping out. So that's a good
right.
thing.
Right.
Oh, you're nice and clear, man. Sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, I had a little animal emergency. Every now and then, one of my ferrets likes to get themselves stuck precariously in their cage. They like get their toes stuck somehow. I'm not quite sure how they managed to do that, but
they scream horribly then or something?
No, they just like flop around. They just flop around like a fish, you know what I mean? And I have managed to, you know, all the little places where they get their toes stuck, I've managed to like tape them off. But they keep finding new spots every now and then. And then they don't scream or make any noise at all. They just kind of get their toes stuck, and then they flop around like a fish on a fishing line, you know, or something like that. You have to go over and unstick them. So apparently it doesn't hurt very much because, you know, they don't really make any audible noise other than the flopping and the banging around in the cage.
These guys are saying we should do a video stream for the show. I'm like, you want to look at Alan? Or me for that doing
four separate video streams, right?
Yeah,
one in each
house. That's the problem now is we have to do four separate ones because I had thought about doing something like that. I was going to do something on I can't remember the freaking program I was going to do. Anyways, I was going to do that last week, and I'm like, wait a second, what the hell's the use? You see me sitting here doing nothing. So it would have worked fine when all four of us were together.
We can do a video stream of me and Pat and Dan, and for Alan, we'll just put up a picture.
A cardboard cutout.
Right? And there's Alan still sitting there looking at his computer screen.
He's contributing every week. Oh, man. Or as Alan used to say, you see the back of our heads.
Right. The back of our heads bop up and down a little bit. pound on our laptops.
Well, yeah, because that would basically be what the whole thing was. I mean, the whole show would be just be like us pounding at the laptops, but...
New version of Jokoja came out.
Seeing a lot of different video streams, that's usually what people are doing anyway, so...
Pretty much.
It wouldn't
pretty
be much, that much different, yeah.
A couple guys sitting on a computer, oh boy.
Boring.
Yeah. Jokoja came out, new version of Jokoja. I installed it, but I haven't played with it yet. Looks interesting. You guys notice that, Jokoja, new version?
No,
nope.
I didn't notice.
I haven't had a chance to notice anything lately.
Yeah, it just came out. I haven't tried it yet. It's on my list of things to do.
All right.
You'll have to let us know how it looks.
It looks nice. It's a question of how it works.
Well, that too. That's an important thing.
Ay, ay, ay. I got meltdown after meltdown over here.
What are you breaking over there, Dan?
Oh, the kids are breaking.
Uh-oh.
They're having a hard time going to sleep. One wanted to sleep with the other one, and the other one said no, and all hell broke loose. That's the way it goes.
That's another reason why we had a second kid, man. I didn't want a lonely child.
That's the way,
That sibling rivalry is good, man.
They
beat on each other, you know?
That's it. Well, yesterday, my daughter was beating up a sixth grader outside.
Nice.
I came around the corner because I had to go get him for lunch, and they're all out there, and she's over there beating on this little boy. It wasn't a little boy. It was a sixth grader. And I'm like, you know, she's like, yeah, we're wrestling around. And I'm like, okay, you just be careful because you have training. He doesn't. She just earned her blue belt in Taekwondo. So.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh.
And this is how I kick you in the nutsack.
The exact reason for that.
Yeah, but that's it. That's how it starts.
Oh, man.
Then the lawsuit comes.
The Texas 500 people, did you hear what happened with them? The driver had a car accident and broke his back or something.
Yeah, and they go into the...
And they had the backup driver in there, and he actually qualified.
Which is good.
So how big is the decal going to be? Like 1-inch square? Like on the corner of the car? Going by at 140 miles
an hour? I think it's like the size of like one of the doors or something on the car.
They get that much money? I thought that they were going with the one on just the front nose cone or whatever it is. Nose cone. Whatever the hell they call that. I don't know. Go look.
Well, we'll see. Hey, did you guys see 60 Minutes this week?
No.
Nope.
They had a segment on the One Laptop Per Child initiative.
Been so busy, I haven't even seen 1 minute this week.
Yeah, basically they talked about the whole program, you know, and they talked to Negroponte and everything, and I don't think Linux was mentioned once by name, ever.
Are you sure that it wasn't Randy Plesser that did that interview?
I don't think they mentioned it once. I did not hear Linux spoken once. Did not hear it. Basically, he was bitching about Intel. Basically, Intel is coming out with their own, like, low-end laptop for kids.
Well... Is that the one that Intel and Microsoft are working on or something?
I think so. So he was pretty pissed off, and they had the Intel guy on there, and he's like, well, yeah, they showed like some memo that they had, you know, comparing the one laptop per child machine to the Intel machine. He's like, yeah, that's a marketing memo, yeah.
Yeah. I like that. That one laptop per child is pretty cool project.
Yeah.
Well, we got 5 minutes left. I got a 4-minute song, so anything else?
Let's do it.
Alright, I'm going to actually play some honest-to-goodness metal tonight for all the metalheads out there. No, this is not Europop or rap. This is metal. It's the artist is Leechmaster, title's Hellish Dreams, genre metal, from Podsafe Audio. I haven't listened to it myself, so could or could not be not safe for work. Yeah. It'll come back. It'll be rap or something. I don't know. But we'll see how it goes. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And great guest tonight. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening,
good night, everybody.
Good night.
There it is. Hella Stream.
Good night.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
Yeah, that's it. It's over.